हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So page 106, Sri Govindavasya, Siddhanta. The word too, but, is used here to dispel doubts. The individual spirit soul performs pious and impious deeds. Taking into consideration the individual soul's efforts, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives him facility to act in a certain way. Therefore, the previously stated objection is not valid. Right? Previously stated objection. Done was because the Lord acts after considering the jivas at Lord's at all, because they're worried about now being independent. Right? First they're saying that the material energy is doing everything because you get bad effects. Then when you point out, no, it's all the jiva, then it's, well, is he independent? Yeah. Right? So in other words, in areas where he's not enjoying, then he blames it on the material energy. Then we say, you know, it's not. It's the jiva's action. Then the point is then that's controlled by the Lord. Is he independent? Right? So the same eternal things of free will and how you say, predestiny and all these kind of things and I and mine, all that kind of stuff. Right? So you can see it, you know, coming through. It means it's presented in a very intellectual way, but it's just, it's an intellectual's presentation and, how you say, security or something in the way of presentation of its intellectual. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? It sounds very intelligent.
Yes, yes.
So they take shelter of intelligence to establish their controlling and enjoying.
Yes.
Right? Well, the karmi takes shelter of his efforts and results to, you know, for his controlling and enjoying.
You mentioned about security.
Security.
Yeah, what was that?
What was that? Yeah. Security is I. And then mine is attachment.
But that's in general for the material world.
Yes, but yes, of course. It's general for all living entities. But for the intellectuals, if it doesn't sound logical, they can't feel satisfied.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
While if for the karmi, if it doesn't sound practical, they don't feel satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is I and mine has to be presented through a medium. Right? Like that. So, this is the intellectual's medium.
Maharaj, one Western philosopher, he said that all Western philosophy presents their passions as the axioms of their philosophy.
Okay. Yeah, their own personal passions.
And issues.
And as the core of their philosophy.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. That's quite interesting. The pious and impious deeds of the individual spirit soul are like different seeds that sprout into different kinds of plants. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is like the rain that falls on these seeds and makes them grow. Therefore, in this situation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the instrument by which these seeds of karma bear fruit. The seeds of various trees, vines, and other plants are the specific cause of these plants. And the rain that makes them grow is the general cause. If no rain cloud brings water, there will not be any variety of sweet flowers or other plants. If there is no seed, there will not be any flowers or plants either. In this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives the results of the pious and impious deeds performed by the individual spirit soul. even though they dispatch, though dispatched by another, a person is still the performer of the actions he does. Therefore, it cannot be said that the individual spirit soul does not perform actions, right? So the Lord is involved, but he's general. He's not the specific, because otherwise, why is that particular seed growing? Right? Because if the rain comes, all seeds will grow. Right? But why that specific seed is growing, that's the living entity. So you can't say because it's a general thing that it doesn't belong to the living entity. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you go out in the backyard, you plant all your plants, then you water them. You know, or it rains. So, but the same time is it's considered you planted the field, you cultivated, you harvested, it's yours. But the point is without the rain, it doesn't happen. Right? So the Lord is behind the whole thing, because it's only by him that anything works. You know, it's just like if someone comes along and asks you, I mean, we're talking because we have two platforms here. Right? Now we're talking about the platform of the karma and everything like that, and the concept of I and mine. Right? You go into the kitchen, you put a piece of bread into the toaster machine, then the toast comes up, but you're not in the kitchen and someone else walks into the kitchen at that time, then, yeah, that's another thing. then they'll ask, whose toast is this? You know, who made the toast? Right? So, but the point is you'll say the person made it, but technically, no, the toaster made it, and technically the electricity made it. And that, you know, that goes back to the generator. So wherever it is, you know, so the, you know, Hoover Dam made your toast. You know, very nice of Hoover Dam, you know. But the, does that make sense? Yeah. So it depends on what we're bringing out, because now we're bringing out the idea, the principle of how the living entity is bound in the material world. Because if you understand this, now you understand if he changes his activity and does it in connection with the Lord, then the seeds that are sprouting aren't material, they're spiritual. Right? Then you're dealing with the devotional creeper. Then that watering, that will then take it to the spiritual world. But otherwise, what's going on here, it'll sprout here, it'll grow here, the results are here. Does that make sense?
Maharaj,
yeah.
When you say that the jiva is a dependent agent,
yes,
and the Lord is independent, so yes, that is in the case of this material realm, then what happens in the spiritual world then? Is there also he's or like practicing sadhana over here? Then that is, we say that the jiva is a dependent agent.
Means you're practicing. I didn't quite catch it, because you mentioned sadhana and then you mentioned sadhana, the spiritual world, and the two didn't.
Let's not go to the spiritual
world. Okay.
Sadhana, Vaidhi sadhana, when you practice. Even in that case, the jiva is a dependent agent.
It means the point is who's making the rain happen?
The Lord.
Yeah. So the Lord's doing that. And so then, are we not dependent? Can we make Bhakti Devi function? Can we make the Yoga Maya function? No. You understand? We're a transformation of the Tathasta Shakti, which is the energy that's between the internal and the external. It's the energy that the two of them can touch each other.
So he remains dependent throughout the entire process until praying.
It remains throughout the entire process till praying, yeah. And then at prema, they're still dependent. So in other words, it's something you just got to get used to. I'm not the controller, I'm not the enjoyer. That's just who we are. And that's what it means, self-realization. We realize who we are. We're the servant of the Lord. But it doesn't mean that in rasa that there, you know, one is not satisfied. One feels that completeness, because you're in touch with the complete whole. The point is that activities done without the connection to the Lord, though they actually still are connected, that's illusion. So you don't get, you don't experience that aspect. But that what is done in connection with the Lord, then you experience the transcendental.
Okay.
So Maharaj, all these topics of eye and mind are connected to karma and jnana.
Yes, karma and jnana, if you look it up that time, but it comes down to the point of that I want to be the controller and enjoyer. So that's envy and attachment. So that's what I mentioned, we're envious of Krishna because it should be done for his satisfaction, but we want the results. You know, does that make sense? We just, because you're performing an activity, it gives a result. And then that's offered to Krishna. But we think that that result itself is enjoyable. We could enjoy it. But that result is not what Krishna is enjoying. It's the bhakti that Krishna is enjoying. Right? Because that result is not what's going to satisfy the living entity. Right? It's that relationship with Krishna that will satisfy. Just like for Krishna, it's not the transformation of the jnana and kriya shaktis that is what is giving him pleasure. It's the devotion in which that's done that gives him pleasure. Right? So being part and parcel of Krishna, we also, by the transformation of the jnana and kriya shaktis, we can't be satisfied. But we're thinking that if we apply our desire to the jnana and kriya, then we should be happy. Because the jnana and kriya is serving Krishna's desire, and he's happy. But what we're missing is the aspect of relationship, of devotion. You know, and so because of that, then we suffer. So when we see it in connection to Krishna, then it all works. It's not a problem of that we're engaged in activities and all that. It's a problem that we're engaged in activities that are separate from Krishna. That's the problem. Right? Because sometimes we'll take it that jnana and knowledge and detachment are the important elements. But they're just ornaments of bhakti. They come along with bhakti. Means as bhakti increases, jnana and means knowledge and detachment, they all increase together. Like equally, right? But we have to understand it's the bhakti that's creating the jnana and detachment. Like that. So bhakti is independent. So if you perform bhakti, the knowledge and detachment come along with it. Along with all other good qualities. You know, non-violence, all these other aspects. Whatever good qualities, they all come, they're all ornaments on bhakti. So bhakti is the independent one. So if you're cultivating bhakti, you don't have to cultivate these others separately. But you have to be willing to engage them in the service of the Lord, you know, through bhakti. So when an opportunity comes up to use knowledge or use detachment or to use, you know, selflessness or, you know, kindness or, you know, any of these righteousness, any of these natural qualities, then we use them in the Lord's service. But just when they naturally come up.
Yes.
Does that make sense? You know. So it's just like they will come up naturally in the performance of duties. But they won't necessarily be the prominent one. Does that make sense? You know. So just like if you're cooking, then let's say you have a certain spice. Then, technically, you can put that spice in everything. But generally, you don't. It goes more nicely with one preparation and not necessarily with another. Right? So then, using it like that, you get the variety. So it's not that you have to separately endeavor to engage that spice. It naturally comes up in make the preparation of that particular item. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like if you're making lemon juice, you don't have to separately try to engage lemons. It just comes along with lemon juice. Does that make sense? So, like that, when it's overly prominent, then you call it karma yoga or jnana yoga or dhyana yoga. But when it's in its natural balance, just whenever it comes up, then you see these things. Because they're secondary. Even meditation is a secondary aspect. We'll take it, oh yes, meditating on the Lord is the primary aspect. But it's, for the Brajbasis, that is their, that comes as secondary for them. Because their attachment to Krishna, if you're attached to something, you always think about it. So the meditation is just a secondary quality that comes up because of their attachment. Right? For others, then it's part of their practice. They meditate on the Lord. And it's transcendental. But that becomes more prominent. But for the Brajbasis, it's a secondary thing.
And how to develop this attachment?
By following the process of devotional service as given by the Acharyas in the Association of Devotees. It's not a separate thing. It just develops with the process. It's just like this. Let's say you eat something. Do you, when you eat it, do you taste it?
Yes.
Okay, now when we say, but the taste, you're eating, then the secondary, you taste it. It nourishes the body, it gets rid of the hunger. So the eating gets rid of, does all that.
Yes.
Right? Now if we ask, but how do we get this taste? By eating. So, in other words, we generally take things and make them as a primary aspect when they're not. They're a tool, they're a part of the process. But it doesn't mean that is the core thing. Attachment to Krishna is the core element. Right? When that attachment is exclusive, that's called prema. Right? And when it's like the Brajabasis, where that exclusiveness is complete, then that's Brajabhakti. That's pure, unalloyed devotion. When it's just on, then it's pure devotion. When it's about, that's pure, unalloyed devotion. Does that make sense? So just like how you say? Yeah. Yes. Okay. Therefore, it cannot be said that the individual soul does not perform actions. Why is that? The sutra explains, quote, because when orders and prohibitions are not without meaning, then orders and prohibitions are not without meaning, right? Because the individual soul performs. Because the God's doing, the material energy is doing, you know, how you say, then what is it, what's the point of the prohibitions and orders of the scripture? Unless they apply to us. Right? We're the sadhaka. Material nature is not the sadhaka. Or the Lord. Right? The word, quote unquote, adi, beginning with, in this sutra means that the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives mercy and punishment according to the pious and impious actions of the individual spirit souls. If that interpretation is accepted, then the orders and prohibitions of the scriptures are meaningful. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead actually forces the individual spirit soul to act piously or impiously, and the soul is like a rock or a log and has no independence, then the orders of the scripture to perform pious deeds and avoid impious deeds are all worthless and should be rejected. Because otherwise, what's the point? It's going to happen how it happens anyway. The scriptures say that when he is merciful, the Supreme Personality of Godhead engages the individual spirit soul in pious activities so he may be elevated. And when he withdraws his mercy, the Supreme Personality of Godhead engages the spirit soul in impious activities so he may go to hell. Because if someone wants to go to hell, Krishna arranges that. He wants to elevate himself, then Krishna arranges that. It's just whatever we want. You know what I'm saying? We'll look at it, well, hell means suffering, right? But the point is it's a matter of, we define, we're, in our mind, we're defining, we're thinking, what is hell? Right? But let us say, what is it? Who is saying? What's Krishna saying? Or, no, I think it's later, I think it's 12th canto, about the point of that hellish condition starts When how you say, men and women are looking for that relationship. Does that make sense? I mean, what I said made sense?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, in other words, let us say someone likes to party. They like to go out to a party, you know, go to the nightclub, do like this and that and all that. But why are they going there? Because they're looking to find somebody to spend time with.
Yes.
So they'll consider that a very nice situation. But according to the scriptures, that's already a hellish situation for the living entity. Because all the anxiety, are they going to find him, what's going to happen, how it's going to work out. You know what I'm saying? Are they going to, you know, wake up in the morning, you know, they don't know where they are, and there's some weirdo, you know, next to them and that. You know, so, you know, how does this work? So it's already a hellish condition. So we're taking it, no, that's a nice condition. So, does that make sense? But it's already hellish because we're taking up this impious aspect. We're considering it's good and it's nice.
Alright. So here it's about the principle, basically, not the location, hell.
Hellish just means you're suffering.
Yes.
So if you have material attachment, you suffer. That's hellish.
Yes.
You don't have, you know, you don't have material attachment, then it's not suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Now, within suffering, there's what we call, you know, the pleasant suffering, the suffering that we're interested in, and then there's the suffering we're not interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, let's say, one goes on to the internet and whatever particular social media that you are used to using to, you know, pick up a few bits of gossip. Right?
Yes.
So, then in that, you'll consider that nice.
Yes.
But technically it's a hellish condition. But we'll consider that a nice one. Now, or let's say, you know, you get, how you say, you bump into a friend or something, and that and all the little bits of gossip that they have to say, you're good with that.
Yes.
Okay? Now, what if it's a person you don't like to be with, but they're talking the same gossip? You consider it an unpleasant condition.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So within hellish, we're deciding this is nice, this is not. Right? So that's within hellish. So actually, then that's why karma and jnana never get you beyond the material condition. So it's only when you give up material attachment, then you give up the hellishness of the material existence.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's only when you take up bhakti, then you get the positive. That is the natural condition of the natural ananda of the soul. Because the material world, you're not dealing with ananda, you're dealing with sukha. So what you consider happiness, then you'll call that happiness. And what you don't, you'll consider that misery. But it's all misery. Because sukha simply means removing misery. So you're happy because you remove the specific misery that you want to remove. Does that make sense? So that's why for each person, what they call happiness and what they call distress is different. Just like, let's say, you have 50 guys with pointy weapons standing there in front of you. Right? You might not consider that a good situation. But when we hear of, you know, especially the old stories of the great warriors, then they would come into the session, the term many times used, at least in English, is they would wade into this. Does that make sense? Wade here?
No.
I'm not talking about my uncle here.
Like through water.
Yeah, it's like you have a little bit of water and you wade in. So wade in means you go in confidently and like that. You don't tiptoe in or like that. So it's like the battle is like this, you know, ocean of insanity, and they wade into it.
Mm-hmm.
So that means they're very comfortable in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that bewilders them. They can see everything. It's, you know, it'd be just like if anything you know well. You know, cooking well, there's nothing in the kitchen that bewilders you. There's no preparation, there's no technique that bewilders you. You can comfortably walk in anything. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, the devotees are cooking for a feast, a big festival like that, and you happen to walk into the kitchen. It's not like, you know, what's going on here and all so much is happening. You just walk in, hey, is there anything we can do? Yeah, hey, can you fry the pakoras? Mm-hmm. And you just walk over there and do it. It's not like, oh, what's this and how to do? I don't know how to do and like that. You know, so that's the thing, is that you're comfortable in it. Does that make sense? So for one living entity, it's a hellish condition. For another living entity, it's not. Does that make sense? You know, you're walking along, you step in a mud puddle, you consider it bad. Right? But, you know, the pig loves it. Does that make sense? So that's the... Wow, that's serious. Does this make sense? What we're dealing with here? So, the point is that therefore, the Lord is just the general cause. He just waters whatever seeds the living entity has cultivated. And they grow. So the whole process is controlled by the Lord, but the living entity gets to choose what they do. Does this work? Are we?
Yeah.
Yes. Are we there?
Yes.
Good? Okay. Yes.
It seems that although there are five factors,
mm-hmm.
and everybody basically, you know, gyanis, karmis, and bhaktas accept it, that the main idea of the karmis and the gyanis is that the jiva is in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And then the bhakti starts shift a little bit. That's why it's a difficult process, in sense that we're not the center anymore.
Yes. That's the main thing in the Vedic process, is we're not the center. That's why it's like, let's say, if we take a corporate world, is the businessman the center? Like that. And then he has his assistants who likes to be there. The professionals and the office guys and the guy, you know, whatever it is, the janitor or whatever. But he's the center. But when you use the Varnashram system, is he the center? No. Is the administrator the center? And even is the Brahmin the center? No, because it's God. So all of them means the Brahmin has to be connecting to God. The others have to at least connect to the Brahmin and connect to God. But if they can connect directly to God, then that's because they're devotees. So that's the thing. No one's the center. You know, if the kid stays at home, they're the center. They go to the school, they're not the center anymore. So that's the hard part. You know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? You know, or the parent, you know, from their point, it's like the kids at home, they're the center because they're making arrangement and all that. Kid goes to school, they're not the center. You know? Or when you're at your home, you're the center. When you go to your work, you're not the center. You know what I'm saying? So there's always that shift, and that's a problem. So if you like your work, you like the things like that, then it works very nicely for you. But if you don't, you're not comfortable, then it's a problem. So yes, that's a major thing, is that being able, that when we say humility, it's the symptoms of the humility are natural to follow, but it's the attitude that I'm not the center. I'm not the controller, I'm not the enjoyer, I'm simply the instrument. Right? So we're doing this, we're the instrument in the overall thing, because the Lord is the instrument, but he's controlling the whole thing, but he's just instrumental in getting what the living entity does. That's the thing. It's non-different, but it's different. So when we accept that, then that's the strong position of the living entity, because that's the natural position. So we've taken this unnatural position, we think because of that we'll be happy. But when we take up the natural position, then... Does that make sense? You know, it's just like someone's been sick or something like that, whatever it is, some physical difficulty or that, so they're not moving properly and, you know, whatever it is with others. But so then as they get healthy, then they have to acclimatize back into...
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? You know, that kind of thing. You know, So that's the difficulty, or, you know, something's wrong, they, you know, hurt their knee, so the physiotherapy, they have to get back into proper walking, or there's always that seeming that that's the trouble. No, that's the natural. So ignorance, because of the avidya shakti, we reverse things. And so then within avidya, then we have our knowledge and, you know, vidya, knowledge and ignorance.
Yes.
But it's all ignorance. That's what he's saying. When you connect it to Krishna, that's when it takes on actual knowledge. So when we say knowledge, we mean self-realization. Right? In connection to Krishna. It can be stretched to include the jnana yogis. But that's because they're at least detaching themselves from the material energy. But when we talk about scholars in that are just studying material knowledge, then they're purely under avidya. Just that they have more volume of avidya than anyone else, and they can quote from various books on avidya, you know, so that sets them apart. You know, they say. So so if this means that the individual living entity has no choice and impious deeds are forced on him by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the Supreme Personality of Godhead is cruel and unjust. Right? Because why would they get, you know, it's just his whims. A monster. Therefore, it must be concluded that the individual spirit soul does have free will and is responsible for his actions. Although he does not have the power to transfer his desire and will into concrete action unless the Supreme Personality of Godhead permits. In this way, everything is explained. Right? So, he's responsible for his action. He has free will. He's responsible for his actions. But for that action to actually happen, that's by the Lord. It's like the small child. They want to eat something. They have that desire and all that. They have that free will that they want to eat like this. But it can't be transformed into something of, you know, tangible. Or concrete, as it mentioned, unless the parent arranges it. Right? Unless they're tall enough to reach the handle on the refrigerator. Right? So, Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:12, 21-23. Just as woven cloth rests on the expansion of lengthwise and crosswise threads, similarly, the entire universe is expanded on the lengthwise and crosswise potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and is situated within Him. Right, so it's just threads, but because the threads are going in the cross, it was lengthwise and crosswise fashion. That transformation, you call that fat cloth. Does that make sense? But it's based on threads. Right, so we see they're different, but they're non-different. So the fabric and threads, you can say, are different, but at the same time, they're the same.
Yes.
So that way, the Lord is everything, and at the same time, is different from everything.
Yes.
So in that way, you can see, you can see the fabric, see the color, see how it affects, how it does like that. But it only is based on the thread. Does that make sense? Just like you have cotton cloth, what its drape will be like cotton. Silk will be like silk, jute like jute, wool like wool. So it'll be like the nature of the threads. It's not different. Right? So that makes sense? Yeah. The condition so... okay. Similarly, the entire universe is expanded on the lengthwise and crosswise potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is situated within Him. The conditioned soul has been accepting material bodies since time immemorial. And these bodies are like great trees sustaining one's material existence. Just as a tree first blossoms and produces fruit, similarly the tree of material existence, one's material body, produces the various results of material existence. This tree of material existence has two seeds, hundreds of roots, three lower trunks, and five upper trunks. It produces five flavors and has 11 branches and a nest made by two birds. The tree is covered by three types of bark, gives two fruits, and extends up to the sun. Those lusty after material enjoyment and dedicated to family life enjoy one of the tree's fruits, and swan-like men in the renounced order of life enjoy the other fruit. One who, with the help of the bona fide spiritual master, can understand this tree to be a manifestation of the potency of the one supreme truth, appearing in many forms, actually knows the meaning of Vedic literature. Because that's what Vedic literature is about. Krishna is all that. That's then the meaning of studying knowledge and ignorance side by side, is you understand what's temporary and what's eternal. Right? So in other words, let's say we're studying Ayurveda, the healing potency. That's Krishna. That's the eternal aspect. Right? And that the principle is that a particular healing potency, you know, I mean that healing, you know, that's one thing, has a variety of manifestations, a variety of healing. That still has that. It has its time when it's manifest and when it's not. That'll be the beginning of the temporary, even though it's always like that, right? Then you have the particular medicines that's manifest through. That's made out of the material energy. That definitely has a temporary. Right? And then that's applied to the individual in their particular situation, which is also temporary. Right? So you have that gross aspect of the patient and the medicine. Right? Then you have the metaphysical of how that medicine always works, whether it's manifest or not. Right? Then you have the Lord, who is the potency behind that. Mm-hmm. Is that?
Mm-hmm. What do we say? What do you mean when you say that this principle, whether it's manifest or not, or that?
It's just like, let's say, cooking. Does cooking exist if no one's cooking? That's what we mean. So if someone's made the medicine or not, the principle of it, even if the universe is not manifest, still that medicine exists in the primary creation.
Yes.
Because it's the Lord, it's an eternal principle. But you'll see it manifest when the Lord wants to and not, but it's still an eternal principle. But you just have to know what's eternal and what's temporary. Does that make sense? And then the universe is manifest, so then you can see that particular medicine. Then you have a situation where someone has the specific disease that medicine belongs to, you know, deals with, that then it can be applied. Does that make sense? So, in other words, medicine doesn't depend upon people being sick. It's already there before it happens. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, footnote 63. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, "This universe which takes shelter of the Lord is not different from him, since it is the pastime of his Maya. This is explained with an example. In the Lord, this universe is like a cloth which is spread out with vertical and horizontal threads. As the source of samsara, it is called samsara. This is described as a tree. It is without beginning, purana, containing the current of karma. The flower is the first manifestation of the fruit. The fruits are happiness and distress, results of piety and sin." So you're going to get a flower anyway. It's just now which fruit it will give. Will it be bitter or will it be sweet? Right? You know, just like Corella. There's a flower there. And then you get the Corella. Right? The metaphor is expanded. It has two seeds, piety and sin. It has hundreds of roots or unlimited desires. It has three trunks or three gunas. It has five branches, the five gross elements. It produces five saps, the five sense objects. It has 11 branches, the senses. In the tree is a nest with two birds, jiva and paramatma. It has three layers of bark, vata, pitta, and shleshma. Okay. Another word for a cough up.
I said okay, thank you. I didn't know.
Yeah, shleshma. Just. I think it brings out the more mucusy aspect. It has two fruits, happiness and distress. It's spread up to the sun. One who goes beyond the sun becomes free of samsara. It means it only goes up to the sun. It doesn't go beyond. So when you go beyond the sun, then you go beyond samsara. This verse describes the enjoyers of the fruits. The vultures, those who desire enjoyment, are the householders. They eat the one fruit of the tree, suffering made of avidya. There is only one fruit, since both hell and heaven are forms of suffering produced by avidya. Right? Because avidya means you don't know your relationship with the Lord. So in not knowing your relationship, then this suffering then has two aspects, that which you call nice and that which you call not nice. Does that make sense? The sannyasis, hamsa, eat one fruit, happiness arising from vidya, by discrimination. Since things related to jnana all give happiness. He who knows about, right, so that means the goodness. Right, so in other words, passion, ignorance will give that other stuff. So that'll be suffering, right? Now, within the suffering, the passion side will call happiness. And the ignorance side will call, you know, unhappiness. Like that. But then when you go beyond this, you go to the transcendental, to the devotional, you know, to bhakti. That goes beyond this. So then it's, yeah. He who knows about the many forms arising through Maya Shakti, through worshipping gurus, knows the real meaning of the Vedas. Sardartha Darshani 11, 12, 21 through 23. Right? Because this knowledge we get from the Acharyas, otherwise we would never know. We just wouldn't. Right? Okay, Adhikarna 15. The jiva is an amsa of Brahman. Okay, so the next. So we're taking it in. So, amsa adhikaranam. Sutra reference 2.3, 41 through 43. Adhikarna Prakashika. The Advaitins posit that the jiva is the Lord restricted by Maya. They explain this using the popular Mayavad analogy of pot and space. Just as the space within the pot merges with ether on the destruction of the pot. Likewise, the jiva merges with Brahman and becomes Brahman on attaining liberation. So it sounds very good. You know, this is the whole thing of these points of karma and jnana. They sound nice. They sound logical. Because you say this pot and then it merges with the whole pot. But the point is it's that much space. Like you have a pot, means if you know the math, you could calculate how much space is there. So when you remove the pot, it's still only that much space. Because if it expanded and became the whole space, then why is it the whole space is not in the pot? You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem with these things. It just sounds good to them.
Because it is logical. That's the reason why we have so many followers of Mayavad philosophy than other schools.
Yes, but it's logical because that's what you want to hear.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, let's say there's something you're supposed to do and you really don't want to do it, but somebody illogically explains why you should, it still doesn't necessarily matter. You know, it's like, okay, that's nice, but I just don't feel like it. So the point is because they have a particular feeling, therefore this logic, then they can relate to it. You change the feeling, you change, you know, the meaning. Yes.
It's a very good example of when Narad Muni came and preaching to Dhruv Maharaj, and he says, you just have to accept the situation because that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And logically explained, but Dhruva said, my heart is different, the fire is too much. I can't, it's a good instructions, but I can't accept it. So then he gave him, you know, the next level of instructions, but he just couldn't accept it.
Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is when lower can't be, deal with the one above that. Because it's a descending process.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, we take it that, oh, if you can't understand the lower, how will I understand the higher? But the principle you can always understand. Then you bring the principle down how much into detail you can actually appreciate. Mm. Like that. Yeah. Okay, nice. Mm. He Here in this Adhikarana, the Shutrakar disproves the above allegation by establishing the Jiva as an Amsa Brahman, based on Shrutis and Smritis, right? So it's not that that little bit in the pot becomes the whole sky. It still remains as that little bit that's there. But it's the same amount of sky, whether it's in a pot or not. It's not that by covering it's become something else. Right? They say the space in the pot, but it's still space. It's not something else. But they're dealing with it as if it's something different. Right? Yeah. Okay. The Sutrakar disproves the above allegation by establishing the Jiva as an Amsa Brahman based on Shrutis and Smritis, which describe the relationship between the Lord and the Jiva as master and servant, creator, created, pervaded. Wow. That's probably actual English. America would just be pervader, pervaded. Like that. Okay. It's interesting how, you know, what the actual word is, you find out something else. This delineates Brahman as a whole and Jiva as a part, Amsa. Thus, there is no prospect for the Jiva to become Brahman due to his eternal subordination to Brahman. Hence, it is thereby verified that Jiva is an Amsa of Brahman. Right? So you're doing one thing at a time. You're first establishing that he's doing, then you're establishing his position and relationship with the Supreme. Because once you get that, then the thing is, oh, how about this control? Then you're showing the relationship. Right? So you see, if you continue up this, you'll get to bhakti. Mm-hmm. So if your intent is bhakti, then going through these steps is then also within the realm of bhakti. Mm-hmm. But if your purpose is not bhakti, it doesn't get there. It doesn't take on that, like you were discussing the other day. If you're only trying to establish them in goodness, and that's all the farther you're thinking to take it as the goal, then it will only have that aspect. It will only have that pious credit of learning that branch of Vedic knowledge or whatever you're doing. And that's all. Let's say you're doing that through, let's say, Ayurveda, you know, or astrology. It will only get the quality of teaching that. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But if your intent is bhakti, and this is all the farther that they can deal with right now, then that's what you do. But as soon as there's an opportunity for it, you take it. You understand? There's a difference. Because the one is a philosophy, we don't have to deal with this. You know, it's not necessary. So it doesn't go there. And so when there's the opportunity, we may not take it. You know, because we're too worried about, oh, they won't like it, and so then we won't be popular. So the goal is popularity. So to gain popularity, then the mode of goodness is nowadays popular. At least the qualities of it. The regulation required to gain that, then there's going to be absolute total opposition. Right? And then the ones that seemingly don't appreciate this thing, the ones who are more conservative, they'll be good with that. Mm-hmm. So in other words, the liberals like the qualities without the effort. And the conservatives are willing to put in the effort for the qualities. Right? But one focuses on that effort, one focuses on the qualities. But you're supposed to put in the effort for the qualities, use them together. Does that make sense? So then the problem comes is it won't go there. But if it's a matter of this is all that's going today, and then you see and you wait, and then there's a moment, and as soon as it is, then immediately at that point, then you're giving the Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? It's a difference. It may look the same, just like the impersonal philosophy and the Vaishnava philosophy look the same up to liberation. But what's beyond that is not. But if you only use theirs up to liberation, it's very difficult. If you understand what's beyond, it makes getting to liberation quite easy. But the technique, the knowledge is exactly the same. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is the secondary doesn't look different. So it's what the primary is that makes it. So
now everything depends on the intent.
On the intent,
so
yes.
So how to to cultivate the right intent always.
By association, that's what it mentioned in this last point. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur said. He who knows about the many forms arising through Maya Shakti, through worshipping gurus, knows the real meaning of the Vedas. So that means you have to take the instruction of the spiritual master, from the acharyas, right? Then that you have to then try to be applying that. You have to accept that. Because accepting that, that's then when you can apply it. If you don't accept it, you can't actually apply it. You know, it may seem like it is, but you're not actually. So. Okay. Footnote 64. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur establishes that the jiva is eternally inferior to the Lord. Chaitanaf paranu gatas tadvidhi vasyayavata. The many conscious beings are followers of the Supreme, for they must obey his commands. Here the word chaitana means conscious spirit souls. The plural is used here to indicate that the souls are many in number. The word paranugata means that the souls are subordinate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are under his control. This is so because they must obey his commands. In the Shruti Shastra is said, Ya atmani tishtan atmanam antar yamayati. Residing in the heart, the Supreme Personality of Godhead controls the individual living entities. In the Bhagavad Gita 18:61, it is said, Ishvara sarva bhutanam hride sheir juna tishtati. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wandering of all living entities. End quote. In the Narada Pancharatra, second night, first chapter, Lord Sadashiva explains, Jivas tad pratibhimpascha bhokta cha shuka dukayo kechid varanti tad nityam karanasya gunena cha. The individual spirit soul, who is like a reflection of the Supreme Lord, suffers and enjoys in the material world. Some sages say this eternal soul has qualities like those of the Lord himself. Vidyamanat tirodhanam tirodhatachchasambhava dehad dehantaram yati namrityus tasya kutrachit. Sometimes the individual soul is visible, and sometimes he disappears. When he disappears, he is born again in another body. The soul never dies. He merely travels from one material body to another. Right? Because we'll say he's there and then they're gone. But they're not gone. They just go to another body. Right? In the Bhagavad Gita 7:5-6, the Supreme Personality of Godhead says, quote, besides this inferior nature, O Arjuna, there is a superior energy of mind, which are all living entities who are struggling with material nature and are sustaining the universe. Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both its origin and dissolution. Right? So everything's coming from him. The spiritual aspects, the material aspects, everything is coming from him. So all these aspects that we say are him, they're all coming from him. But also the material aspects in which he's pervading is also him. So in other words, he expands himself, then he pervades that himself. Right? So, like that. In the Upanishads it is said, Sveta Keto Tad Tom Asi. Oh, Sveta Ketu, you are that. Oh, so that's where it's from. Yeah. Sveta Ketu. In Srila Madhvacharya's Tattva Muktavali, text 6, it is said, Shakshat Tattvam Asiti Veda Vishaya Vakyam Tu Yad Vidyate. The Mayavadi commentator on the Vedanta claimed that the words Tattvam Asi are the Mahavakya, the most important statement of the Vedas. According to his explanation, Tat means the Supreme, Tvam means you, and Asi means are. He interpreted the words to mean you are the Supreme, And he claimed there's no difference between the supreme and the individual spirit souls. The Vaishnava commentator on Vedanta interpreted these words in a different way, saying that tatvam is a possessive compound word. Shasti, tatpurusha, tatpurusha, purusha, shamsha, shamasha. According to his explanation, tat means the supreme, and the entire sentence means you are the servant of the supreme. In this way, the proper meaning of the spiritual statement is clearly shown, right? Because it has the possessive compound. So they just kind of leave that on the side, doesn't it?
But marriage, why it is only a grammatical interpretation?
No. The point is that the Veda is only talking about the relationship of the position of the Lord in the relationship with the living entity. So the Dasa Mool, that's what the Veda is talking about. Sambandhavidaya Prayojana. So what we're saying here is that the Mayavadis, they're avoiding the proper grammar that applies here.
Yes.
And just trying to take it at its face value.
Yes.
Right? But so that means is that what they're doing is they're applying Lakshana Shakti instead of the Abhida Shakti. Because the direct meaning would mean you are servant because of the possessive case. Otherwise, what does possessive mean unless there's some possessor and possessed?
Yes.
So they're leaving the Abhida Shakti and using Lakshana. So that's the whole method of the Mayavadi commentary, is it's just Lakshana Shakti. They don't use Abhida Shakti. Because by Abhida Shakti, it means you're a servant of the Lord. So they use the indirect. That's why then they word juggle. They move the words around and try to do and stuff like that. And then if they do apply grammar, they apply it to, you know, get the meaning they want. But if you just took as the grammar presents it, the words, what they mean and the context that they're in, right? Because the context means if there's a conversation, you have to take the whole conversation. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like let's saying, yes, so to make this subject, we need some eggplants. You know, and then we go like this and that, we go to the market and that, but, you know, there's different kinds of eggplants and this and that, so you want to get this guy. This guy here is very expensive. His eggplants are expensive. You know, so now we take it out of context and now remove that part, and now we talk about business and all that, about the expensive eggplants. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about cooking. So that's what they do. You see, is that they'll take one of the verses in the whole conversation and that, like this one, you are that. But what about the ones before and after that? We're talking about the supreme and this. They don't take those ones. They only take the ones that they want to take. So and he's very clever that he doesn't comment on every sutra, you know, or they'll just comment on the ones that work for how they want, and they say like this, you interpret the rest. They don't do it like that. Is that yeah. Yes.
Also, previously it was mentioned, Lord limited by Maya, so the actual word limited, it contradicts the Lord, because Lord is unlimited.
So yes,
it's like it's rasa bas.
Yes, yes.
If we look closely.
Yes, yes. Or then you have to, or just if we're just taking like that, then you have to take it. Then what does it mean? That it means controlled by Maya. Only the jiva is controlled by Maya, because you can't say Maya is controlled by Maya, because Maya is Maya. So
right. That's
there. So that only leaves the living entity. And so, in a certain context, they think they're the Lord in the conditioned state. So in this way, they're the Lord controlled by Maya. If you want to take, you know what I'm saying, just looking. So that was the meanings. You have to take the overall context of it and then interpret it accordingly. So they don't. So the Abhida Shakti is what is to be taken. Only if it is being poetic, then you use the Lakshana. Because the point is, where Lakshana is working, Abhida doesn't work. And where Abhida Shakti works, Lakshana doesn't work. It's not that they're both happening at once. It's the direct is meaning there. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Which, Vedas, everything is Abhidha Shakti only. But they are,
yes, the Abhidha Shakti can be applied there. It's just if there's giving a poetic thing, you know, that aspect, you know, it's like.
Yes.
Is that something else? Yeah. You know, it just means, like it's saying, you know, his face was like the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't mean the actual moon planet. It means that aspect and that pleasantness of the moon and all that. And that's, so that's Lakshana Shakti. So when poetics are used, that's Lakshana. But otherwise, then it's Abhidha is always used. You know, but even there, it means we mean moon, not something else.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Can you elaborate, please, on how is Abhidha is connected with Abhideya?
Because Abhidha means the direct meaning. So applying that direct meaning, that's Abhideya. So the Abhidha Shakti means it's always showing, establishing the worship of the Lord. So taking that instruction and applying it, that's Abhideya. Is that?
Yeah.
Just as we have the Chitta Shakti, similarly we have the Abhidha Shakti also.
Yeah, the Abhidha Shakti will just be part of the Chit Shakti. Means the Chit Shakti is the overall Shakti.
Okay.
Right? Within that it has three divisions. The spiritual, the material, and the Tathasta.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
And then transformations of those, then you get whatever is happening in those places.
This was the main point of Mahaprabhu in his discussion with Sarvabhaumacharya. You avoid the Mukhyavritti, the direct meaning, you always use the secondary.
Okay. So there he uses Mukhyavritti as the Abhidha.
Yeah.
And then Gona, okay, Mukhi and Gona. Okay. Yeah, it's very funny because it's there. See, here they'll say it's a part, they'll say he's the whole. But then at other places they'll say he's non-different. It's just like, okay, the jiva in the pot, you break the pot, then he's non-different from the Lord. So the jiva is, you are that, you are the supreme.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But at the other points, when you say the jiva is there and he's bound by Maya, then you say he's illusion.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't even exist. At the other quote, he says he's the supreme, and he's the unlimited. You know, at the other, he doesn't, so it doesn't make any sense to Mayavad philosophy. So that's Lord Shiva's trick. Is he made a philosophy that's presented so nicely that intellectuals think it's very logical, when it actually is so opposing to each other, it just defeats itself. Yes.
One of the commentators, he writes on the Bhagavata, Himadri, he writes that actually the Vedas, they are in the relationship of master and servant. They give you direct instruction, you know, you are supposed to do this.
Right.
And you have to take it as it is. And the Puranas, they give like a friend. They give a point, but they present so many stories, not directly as a form of instruction.
Mm.
And then the poetic works are more like a lover telling, like, very indirectly indicating, but not like that.
Mm.
And it's he quoted all this to just glorify Srimad Bhagavatam has all the three.
Mm.
So the Vedas, which are supposed to be direct instructions, these like Shankaracharya and others, they commented, they made it, try to make it indirect, because Shankaracharya commented Vedanta Sutras, all the 11 principal Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita.
Mm.
So it's like bringing or trying
to... They're taking the opposite of everything like that, yeah. Yeah, it probably wouldn't have worked if he had used, Kali Das's dramas or something as his establishing his impersonal philosophy. Yes. Okay, moving on. So... speaking of poetics. In the Chaitanya Chandradaya Nataka is presented the following opinion held by the devotees of the Lord. Vasudeva para devata, Vasudeva parat. The word Vasudeva means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than the greatest. The scriptural statement, Sankarshano Jivaha, means Lord Shankara gives life, Jivayati, to the individual spirit souls. These words do not mean that Lord Shankarshan is himself an individual spirit soul, Jiva. He's called Jiva because he gives the life to all the Jivas. Because the life of the Jivas is the prana, right? How does the body function? Because the Jiva can't make the body alive. Mm-hmm. Right? Yes, yes. So that is done by the life force. That's Shankarshan. Right?
Right. And also Lakshmi, she is called Jiva.
That's because she's servant.
But
so in other words, Jiva, you know. That's it.
So the interpretation we always take from the acharyas.
Yes, yes. Because you see the context that's there. And so if you, when you understand it, you can see that that's there. Just like, let us say when we mention the tree again. Did you catch about that, about the two nests? You knew that that was the, but it didn't say. Because we've heard before and we start to understand it. The others we may or may not have remembered. Like that. So with time you start to see light, how they get, that's meaning of Shastra Chakshus. You see according to that. And so it's the language that's used then according to the situation may have a specific flavor. But that matches the situation. Like when he's speaking this way to Ketu, it'll match that. When Indra's speaking to someone else, it's another thing. With different, so these different situations, they may use different language, different vocabulary, and different aspects like that. Also different grammar, depending if Indra's speaking, he's using Indra grammar. Right? Yamara's speaking, he's using that grammar. Brahma's speaking, he's using that. Shiva, he's using his grammar. So in other words, if you look at the ones that are directly quoting Lord Shiva, means, you know, he's speaking. You'll see the grammar in there, then the Panini will fit that very nicely. Mm-hmm. Right? Because he's speaking in his grammar.
Mm-hmm. Which
one is? Narayan. What is this? What are those guys? Moni or Williams? No. Yeah, we use Narayan. So there's a slight different way of how it's used. It's the same kind of meaning, but you'll get a different flavor. So it's meant to bring out one aspect or another aspect. This is confirmed by the words Mamo Bhe Shashvati Tanu. Therefore, the conclusion is that Lord Shankarshan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the creator of the individual spirit souls. Here, someone may protest. Is it not so that the Shruti Shastras declare, I am Atma Brahma, the individual soul is the Supreme? Is it not so, then, that the individual spirit souls are not in any way different from the Supreme? Why then do you claim that the individual spirit souls are subordinate to and dependent upon the Supreme? Because it just says Brahma. And then from that they extrapolate all this, that it means we're absolutely not different completely. You know. Replying to this protest, the author of the sutras reveals the truth. Te kanad yananta parashakti viseshat vat. They have neither beginning nor end, for they are a specific potency of the Supreme. Right? So they're potency of the Supreme, so they're non-different, but they're different. Right? So this create means then there's a transformation of this specific potency, or this or a specific of the general, that means of the Chit-Shakti, means of the Tatastha, and then from that, then you get the specific individual living entities. Right? Yes.
Some places mention that when this Tattvamasi, this is asked to meditate for those, I think in Agni Purana, that mainly because to get one out of the bodily consciousness, one thinks
yes.
that I am this body and this.
Yes, yes.
So by constant, by meditating, I'm Brahman.
I'm the soul. Yeah. Because it's here, they're taking Brahma to mean only one thing. But even in the Vedas, depending upon what it's meaning, whether it's meaning, just the trance of the Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan, then, or Lord Brahma, then there's different grammar. So it's pronounced differently. Does that make sense? Because you have notes. So depending upon that, then it adjusts. So that's the difference. So we see, as even the Veda, it's not just that it's Brahma. You have to see which grammar is being used on what it's referring to. So that we're Brahman means, yes, because we're a potency of the Lord. But it doesn't mean we're the Supreme. Just like the Brahma Jyoti is the Lord, but at the same time is different from Parabrahman.
Yes.
God. Yeah. So that's the point. They take it absolutely, you know, that's a... You know. Yes.
Well, you were mentioning that the four Vedas, they give the Sambandha Gyan. The other bits, the, you know, the Agadeya, the Prayojana.
Means they give all of that, but you'll see the prominence is always on these aspects.
Okay.
Means Veda has everything in it. But the point is that the grammar and all that that's used, the particular poetics that are used, they're more of a like an intellectual poetry.
Mm-hmm.
They're not an emotional poetry.
Okay.
So they're bringing out philosophical positions, not feelings
mm-hmm.
like that. Not that they can't allude to those, but the point is this, it's based on that.
Mm-hmm.
So from that intellectual, then you have just like, you know, in the emotional, you say, you know, hey, say, poetics, you say, you know, like the Lord Ramachandra, you know, rose like the moon from the womb of Kosha. You know, is it? Kaushalya, yeah. That's a Kaushalya Supraja Raman, right? Came up from there. Like that. So they're used in poetics to bring out a flavor and all that. But the poetics in the Veda will be different. You understand? It'll be had more intellectual. So it'll give that kind of thing, but one may not connect it. You understand?
And the Abhideya and the Prayojana, are they given in like, you know, more emphasized?
No, they're not. They're not. They're just mentioned. But all the different paths, everything's mentioned in there.
Mm-hmm.
Then the philosophy is specifically mentioned in the Upanishads.
Philosophy.
Yes, but then even there, because of the presentation through jnana, you may not catch it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then when it becomes more logical in Vedanta Sutra, he may or may not catch it there also. But he does mention that it's only when you get into Puranas that then goes into the other kind of Sanskrit, where then they're presenting it very direct, where it's obvious to us.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
So like, we have the three basic divisions, Sambandha, Vidya, and Prayojana.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that the Upanishads are the philosophy. That also fits under Sambandha, or
the point is all of them are there. It's just which is prominent.
Okay.
Like this rug, what would you call this? You know, you call it black, but you see there's white in it. There's other, but it's predominantly like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.